Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, it's actually an interesting and special day because it is the 10th of August. It is Women's Day, and for today, we are going to be chatting just around what gender transformation in the vehicle finance and automotive sector is actually looking like. And to actually help us to unpack that, we are joined by Raisa Omaji, who is the head of people functions at Absa Vehicle and Asset Finance. And they've actually, you know, stepped up in terms of women who are at the forefront of driving hard bargains and making deals between manufacturers, the various motoring groups and dealers. And this ultimately culminates into, you know, some attractive offers for consumers. So, Raisa, greetings to you.
Thanks, Mudiwa. Thank you for having me on the show today.
No. Thank you for, you know, taking your time to join us for today. So I think just, a bit of a jumping off point for us is, can you just give us some insight, you know, firstly, into what your business unit actually looks like, Absa Vehicle and Asset Finance? Are you guys the equivalent, you know, for other people, you know, that may come from other banking institutions? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of, West Bank and, things like that. Is that the space that you guys are playing in?
Yes. So I'm going to use the acronym AVAF. So yeah, if I make the mistake of not saying Absa Vehicle and Asset Finance, AVAF stands for that. We are a standalone product within the Absa Retail and Business Banking estate. So very similar to your West Banks and your MFCs.
And in terms of that, can you give us just a sense of what upliftment of women has actually looked like in the unit?
So our leadership construct is 90% male, which is very similar to the vehicle and asset finance industry. So the industry norms look pretty much similar to that. We in the Absa business, we do have a strong female pipeline at the lower level that we're developing to come up the ranks soon, but that's a work in progress. In the vehicle industry, most senior positions and owners of dealerships are men. Females tend to take a more support role in the industry. You'd see females in roles like your finance and insurance, which is the F&I, marketing roles, HR and operations. There's very few females in the industry that are CEOs or that hold dealer principal roles. The motor industry is such a fast-paced industry, and transformation has definitely been slow. My personal opinion is that it's a tough industry to break in through because the relationships are key. So there's a lot of long-standing, very solid relationships within the industry. And as a female, unless you have inroads into those, it tends to be hard to make it in that industry.
In actually helping us to understand what the industry looks like, you know, just so that we're comfortable now, you know, Absa Vehicle and Asset Finance, we're going to be using AVAF. As AVAF, what are some of the roles that you guys are actually involved in? Because, you know, most of the time we buy cars and you apply for a loan and you don't actually understand what's actually going on behind the scenes. So can you take us, you know, I guess, behind the scenes and sort of as a way to maybe help us to understand what you mean when you say that women have taken sort of more supporting roles in the industry?
Sure. So our strategy in AVAF has been the bank of the dealer. So we partner with a lot of dealerships in order to write up finance for vehicles. So if I walk you through the value chain of that, those moments for customers. A customer generally sees a car at a dealership or online and then goes into a dealership. So finance is not top of mind for a customer when they're buying. It's more around what car I want and can I afford that car? You know, how does it look or feel? And you know, the buying part of that. We come in as a financial services provider, you know, during the actual finance that's been written up. So for example, if I see a Toyota Fortuna, I know it costs about $550,000. I know I can afford that. I then look at which financial house is going to give me the best rate. Okay. And that's where the competition starts in the industry from a finance perspective. If APSA secures your business, we then go through an application process where we assess your credit. Can we write up that credit? Is it a good deal? We sign that up. So we have a processing center within our business. We then put the finance. So it's going to take me a while to think about this. You got me on the spot, but I'll get there. So once the finance is written, we then communicate with you. This is the rate. So is it prime? Is it prime minus one that we're signing you up? What's the length of the loan? So are you taking it over 5 years, taking it over 4 years, and what your repayment would be every month for the installment? Once that's done, you then an APSA vehicle and asset finance customer, and it's our responsibility to look after you from there on. So that's where the handoff from the dealership on the buying the car happens, and then you are now our APSA customer. So making sure that the monthly debit orders come off, all's well. Now during the COVID pandemic, the payment, so client payments has been the focus. Are people in financial distress? You know, are financial institutions helping people with payment relief over this period? We come in with the care element, making sure that your vehicle has been insured. If anything happens to you while you're driving, have you taken out the right insurance cover? And then when you want to change your car at a later stage, you know, you've picked the right plan. So are you keeping your car more than 4 years? What do you use your car for? And then when you want to change it, hopefully we are first in your mind or top of mind for refinancing your next vehicle.
And then in that process that you've just described, because I think, you know, we now have a healthy understanding of what the value chain actually looks like and the different processes that you guys are involved in. So earlier on, you mentioned the fact that you do have a pipeline in mind, and strategically there's a pipeline to get more women into some of the roles. Where along the value chain or the different processes are you looking to, you know, perhaps implement the strategy?
So we have a few females in our sales manager pipeline. So sales managers within the Gauteng region, they deal directly with the dealerships to write up business. And I think that's the key, because that's where the relationships are formed. The dealer network thrives on relationship building. So that's the best place to start, is to have a solid foundation from a sales manager perspective. We also have a female pipeline in our partnerships. So with the bigger the OEMs, manufacturers. Funny enough, I always talk about my colleague that runs one of the trade centers in Cape Town. So what they do is repossessions, and she's the most feminine lady you'd find, and she manages a group of repossession agents, so what we call RMOs, risk mitigation officers. And if you know the skill set of that role, it's people that have been in the police force previously. You know, they put their lives on the line every day when they go and repossess a car. So it's quite a tough job. And then she brings the cars back in, assesses them, and runs an auction. So she's quite dynamic. And I always use Simone as an example of a tough woman in a hard industry.
That's actually quite a cool story. So I guess with that little story you've just, you know, given us, what type of insights do you think that story sort of gives us, whether it's about misconceptions? What lessons do you draw that others could sort of take away from about how, I think you said her name is Simone, about, you know, her role? What type of lessons do you draw from that?
So I think it's, I'll give you an example, because we actually at the moment running a women's coaching program in APSA called Igniter. And one of the key takeouts that I've had from that program was when a catchphrase was used to see business as a game. And it sounds easy enough, but I think as women, we don't play games. We committed and we go in, you know, with our best to achieve results. So it becomes complex when you have to see it as a game. And we're actually trying to change the mindset of women to say, don't be so emotional when it comes to business. And that's a mistake, because we focus on the winning aspect and we become very emotionally invested. And we worry about how we will be seen. And that can sometimes hinder us in change, and we become a little bit less resilient. If we took a different approach to how we see business, we'd be less pressured to perform. And if we fail, we'd actually be okay with it and take it as a learning, because that's what men do. Okay. And that's what gives them that advantage of a playing field. They're not so emotionally invested. At the end of the day, I think it's our mindset. So for someone who manages a team of tough men, you know, you can't bring emotion in the day. You know, you have to deal with what's in front of you. You have to be flexible enough to change the plan and do what works and make the best decision for the information that you have in front of you, and to know that's good enough, and not to beat yourself up about anything that didn't happen.
You know, as you talk, it sort of brings to mind, you know, so many things just around either apart from misconceptions and our common notions about gender roles. It makes you think, for example, I'm now thinking to myself, because you have insight into what the HR function is looking like in your unit, I'm now thinking to myself, if you're saying that leadership is more skewed towards men, from what you said, what does the beginning of the pipeline actually look like? The actual beginning stages when people are actually applying for the jobs?
You see, that's really interesting, because even in our business, there's a lot of females in the lower levels of the organization. What tends to happen is when females reach their mid-management, you see a lot of them taper off. So if you walk into a branch in any financial institution, you're more likely to see more women than men. You know, call centers also, you'd get more females calling than men. So they are women in the organization. It's just that they're not at the right levels. They're not at strategic and they're not at influential levels. And that's not because of lack of ability. It's around societal pressures, you know. So in my 13 years of in the HR field, I've seen many careers halted due to family responsibilities that become priority midstream in a woman's career. And the females that you do see that succeed to make it to the top, they have really good support structures and that enable them to have both the family life and the career.
And how have you seen some of these gender dynamics actually being perhaps laid bare a bit more by the current COVID-19 crisis?
So, you know, the pandemic, it doesn't have a gender. It doesn't discriminate. It's hit both men and women. However, it has affected women more than men. And that's because of the home challenge. So we've like fast-tracked our digital journey, and we had no choice but to embrace the virtual world of work. So because of social distancing, you know, office space is now limited. Lots of people are working from home. But what you're finding is that women are faced with a challenging dynamic. Relationship stress is definitely rising. And I can talk firsthand around that, because I know a lot of women that are finding it difficult to juggle the pressure of homeschooling, you know, financial pressure because someone has lost their job, maybe not the female, but someone else in the family network has lost a job and they're helping out. And also the roles become blur when you're working from home, because one minute you are in an MS Teams or a Zoom meeting, and the next minute you're rushing to go whip up lunch or to, you know, sign on your kid for a class that they need to attend. So the pressure is definitely on women as they predominantly take on the care role in a family network. From an economic perspective, you also see that a lot of the jobs, so in South Africa, if I can just, you know, keep it closer to home, the industries that have been hit due to COVID was like your tourism, your informal tradings, your beauty sector, you know, all were shut down for quite a long time. So those incomes were impacted and definitely had an impact on the economy. If you also look at our healthcare sector and education sector, predominantly women work in those front lines, and the working conditions have not been up to scratch. So the stress and the mental wellness has had a huge impact on those females. And to think, a lot of females also head up single home, they single moms. So all that pressure comes into the family. It definitely has not only physical effects, but like I said, the mental well-being also being an issue, which all roll up into an end result on our economy.
I'm then interested to, you know, maybe get your thoughts with all these years of experience in HR. It does sound like you've seen a lot during the 13 years that you're talking about. How does one, you know, perhaps, I'm sure this is one of those questions that you hear all the time, but how does one actually go about addressing, you know, some of these issues, at least in a way that works to perhaps get a win-win, or to at least make sure that on the one hand, there is the reality of, let's say, family life, for example, but at the same time, one still wants to, you know, progress with their careers. How do you juggle or how do you address some of those tensions?
Yeah, people always asked about how do you keep a work-life balance? And I used to say there's no such thing. It's all about prioritization. What's important today that I have to get through? You know, I think the stress comes in when there's a long-term plan and the path ahead doesn't set up for that plan. You know, and then you start to stress about, I could have, I should have, you know, those kinds of things. I think to set yourself up for a career, you know, you have to do what's best for you. And I find that a lot of the times in corporate, because I've worked in corporate mainly, there's a pressure on women to be like men. Okay. And there's that notion of equality. I think when you change that narrative to allow women just to be themselves, show up as you are, who you are, and like I said before, play the game, the stress gets lowered. And we know what stress does in our body. You know, it causes unhealthiness, it causes illness. Once we reduce that, women start showing up as they are in the business, and it's fine. You know, we also need to change the mindset that everybody's path is not the same. You know, I might be 35, 36, and I take a gap year to have kids. I'm out the game for maybe 4 years, 5 years until my kids are bigger. And then I join the game again. I might start at a different starting point, but I'm in it. And I'm in it to play it with the rest of my colleagues. So my journey might not be as progressional and as structured as my male counterpart, but it's not about that. It's about when I'm there, what value I create, and am I giving off my best? So I think we need to just take the societal pressure and the pressure and the expectations off women and allow them to be, because they come with their own value and their own benefits in an organization. So I've worked with really amazing female leaders that have made a great impact in the organization. And you just need to be yourself. You don't need to be hard, and you don't need to be just like the male that sits across the table from you.
Yeah. I'm actually feeling that advice, and especially the point that you're making, that it's okay to not conform to sort of, you know, some monolithic idea of what a corporate gladiator. I know that's what some people, you know, that's what some people call them, that it is okay to have, you know, some of those differentiations. And for that, you know, as we are, you know, sort of rounding up this discussion, how do you feel, you know, some of the things that if we're going to be using stereotypes, just now we talk about men as being hard and stuff like that. But what do you think are some of the things that women do possess that men either try to suppress or don't, you know, particularly pay attention to, that could be a competitive advantage?
I think women, it's hard for women to hide what they're feeling. And when they do express it, they don't mask it. They express themselves with passion in the moment. Men generally feel very uncomfortable with that. And it's taken as, you know, she's being dramatic, or there's the emotions coming out again. But I think we don't mask. What also is a strength that I see in women is that when we are focused on something, we want to do it the best. So there's a competitive element. And that's where I mentioned before the judging comes in. We also have that in the back of our mind of how people are going to perceive us. It works against us personally, but when you're in a corporate, it works with a corporate benefit, because we're always putting our best forward.
One of the things that I think it would be good to get your thoughts on is because you do have this insight into what's going on in HR, and you do have the experience, and we've spoken a lot about these dynamics. Do you think that over time there's been progress in addressing, you know, some of these issues that have led us to even have this conversation to begin with? Or do you think it's still just a lot of talk and not too much in terms of moving the needle?
So the facts speak for themselves. We haven't moved forward. I think the industry body doesn't even publish some of the stats. But when you look at organograms and structures of heads of organizations, you can see the work that needs to be done. So like I mentioned earlier, lower down in organizations, you're going to find females. You're going to find a lot of dynamic females. We need to get the top of the house transformed. And that takes time. I was listening to something on the news yesterday that talked about wage disparity. And it's actually shocking that, you know, no matter how progressive we are and how far we think we've come, women still earn less than men. When you look at one or two individuals, you might not see it. But when you put you make the sample size greater and you look across industries, it's actually shocking. I think the conversation you had with another guest was around a savings culture as well. You know, a woman earn less, so therefore they save less. So there's a lot of economic and social aspects that come in with that. So I'm not going to try and be positive like I normally am. I'm going to hit this one with a bit of reality and be really, really honest here is, yes, there's a lot of talk. We haven't done what we needed to do in the last couple of years. The fact that we have, a public holiday to celebrate women says a lot. We just need to start changing the way we see women in the workplace and start changing our mindsets around what commitment looks like and what success looks like.
I like the fact that you've just decided to be real in your assessment of the progress or lack thereof that's been made in this regard. And I think that then deserves a follow-up to just say, for you then, what are your sort of focus areas when it comes to addressing some of these things in your pocket, in your field? What are you personally excited about or trying to move the needle on? Is it skills? Is it career development? Is it better financial planning in the workplace? Is it better mentorship? What are you focused on?
In the HR world, we have very good female representation. our EXCO members generally in the HR area are female. So in the financial sphere, if I can talk about APSA in particular, we're looking at different women development programs. So Banking on Women, Igniter. This focuses on not only skills, but coaching, because I think the component of a balanced life is so important. Women need to understand how business works. We understand ourselves, yet within ourselves within a business context still needs to be explored. And it's okay to stop, take time out, and care for yourself. So we're doing a lot of coaching programs to help women explore that area of themselves, how to also juggle the business. And I mentioned, so I keep on coming back to stuff I've mentioned, so apologies for that. But, seeing business as a game is one of the examples that we're putting in. You need to also, like an athlete takes time out to rest, recover, rebuild before the next game, we have to do that as well. You can't be in it all the time on 100%. So if you're going at 100% this week, where are you making the time to relax, to take some rest, recover, and then get back into it? So it's also that prioritization that becomes so important when you're juggling so many different aspects of life in one day.
And then lastly, on the backdrop of, what you've just said, how have you done it? How did you get to where you are now? Yes, you did mention just now that there is good female representation in HR, but just in terms of your own career projection, how have you done it?
So I joined APSA 13 years ago as a graduate. I've had a really amazing career. I've been given great opportunities, within South Africa, within Africa. I've worked in a few countries as well. I think you can work hard, but you also need to be recognized for that. So when there's leadership that see your value and the value you're creating within the organization, opportunities open. So I've worked with some really amazing leaders that have created the opportunity for me. One of the concepts that we're working on also in our women's program is how to get sponsorship. Women they tend not to market themselves well. And sponsorship is so important. Who's your networks? How are you building your networks? And who's talking about you in the right circles? So sponsorship is also one of the aspects that we bring into our coaching program.
And then I know I'd said, the last point, but then just for everyone else, who's listening out there, if, the country is to be, more deliberate just around, making sure that the needle moves on these issues, what's your advice for the ladies out there?
So I think women should show up as they are, not to be pressured to be like someone else or your male counterpart. And I also think that creating a strong support network is vital. As a woman, you can't do it all. You're not a superwoman. So having those key support structures around you, that when you can't do something, you can always lean on someone else to help.
So Have you know, a good support structure in place, and don't be afraid to show up as yourself. That's us with Raisa Omaji, who is the head of people functions at Absa Vehicle and Asset Finance, just giving us an overview of what their industry is looking like in terms of upliftment of women. Just talking about the fact that she has found that there's a lot of women in the industry, but sort of in the more low levels, and part of her task and part of her mission is to, you know, get more women into more strategic positions. Also, not pulling any punches about the fact that there's so much more progress that needs to be made on so many metrics when it comes to upliftment of women in the economy, and she is definitely not shy to talk about that. And also, at the end of the day, also highlighting how COVID-19 has not discriminated along gender lines, because it's affecting everybody, but it has affected women more.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
A fascinating discussion with Raisa, and if there's one point I want to draw out, it's the point that she makes about the fact that there is a public holiday called Women's Day, the fact that there is a Women's Month, and it's always good to, you know, celebrate the women that we have in our lives, the women in the country, the women in our families. And as important as that is, I think you know, that point that she's making, that you have to take time to do something like this, is sort of indicative of just how much progress still needs to be made in just making sure that some of these things just become a norm. You know, the fact that having, you know, more women in corporate leadership, for example, should just be a norm and not necessarily something that people are always engaging and having conversations about. That after a certain hour, yes, engage, but after you engage, act on the suggestions or the action plans or the strategies that people do come up with through the engagements, make good on those plans, and then, you know, you slowly but surely move things forward. And it's not all gonna happen in one big fell swoop. It's going to be pockets of progress that are gonna happen in different spheres. We heard about their pipeline that they have at Absa Vehicle and Asset Finance, but at the same time, we know that the people are, you know, there are a lot of different initiatives, and as long as all of those different efforts all happen at the same time, the cumulative effect is that the needle will move on these issues. Otherwise, to everyone else out there, we hope that you are enjoying yourself. Happy Women's Day. That's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter, where #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gabaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.